This is 7. Chapter 7, Preventive Maintenance. Not too long ago, I was talking with a friend who is a professional counselor when he said to me, "Art, being a counselor can be so frustrating sometimes. People mess up their lives. They mess up relationships so badly. And then they come to me expecting that a few counseling sessions will work miracles. They make a tremendous mess of things over a period of months, of years. But then they come to me. They want me to fix it. Or they want me to put things back together again in just a few hours. Although, again, they've spent weeks. They've spent months. They've spent years damaging or not maintaining those relationships as they should have." He went on to say, "People need to realize that I cannot fix things in just a few short counseling sessions. They need to understand that it may take a long time to help them learn to deal with the problem or the problems that are real in their lives, and yet even in learning to deal with them, they may yet never be fixed." My friend's words brought several things to mind. First, I heard him say, the longer a person waits, or the longer a group waits, or the longer an organization waits to deal with conflict, the more difficult it is to arrive at a solution or even a partial solution. The longer you wait, the more difficult it will be to arrive at some sort of a solution. The problem grows in complexity, and the potential damage becomes more severe as time passes. The older the conflict, the more difficult it is to find a solution to it. So many things have been said, so many things have been done, so many emotions have been expressed. The level of trust is extremely low. Secondly, I also heard my friend say, although he did not actually use the words, I heard in his thoughts this thought, that if time has something to do with the complexity and the outcome of conflict, then possibly there are things that can be done to help prevent destructive conflict from ever occurring. Let's think about what can be done to keep destructive conflict from ever occurring. Here we're going to talk about suggestions for preventive maintenance. Some time ago, I read a marriage counseling book that was written in terms of what marriage partners wish they had done in order to prevent their marriage from ending in divorce. As I read this book, I began to realize that if these things were done from a stance of preventive maintenance rather than a major overhaul when a problem does occur, then maybe the divorce could have been prevented. Maybe the divorce could have been prevented if some things had been done during that relationship all along rather than waiting to the point where there were serious problems in that relationship. The idea behind preventive maintenance is, in the mechanical world, is that if certain things are done on a regular basis, then damage to the subject involved can either be totally eliminated or greatly reduced. If you maintain something, take care of it, damage can be eliminated or at least greatly reduced. Why could not this same idea be applied to human relationships? Preventive maintenance in human relationships could keep a lot of destructive conflicts from occurring. The challenge to preventive maintenance is great. Preventive maintenance takes time. It takes energy. It takes study and effort and commitment. While starting a fight or slipping into a conflict is fairly easy, it takes some real energy to keep a fight from happening or keep a disturbance from occurring, while getting into a fight or an argument is fairly easy. Further, as the fight continues, damage is done often to the point of being irreparable. There are losers on both sides of all sides when destructive conflict occurs, even though one party may be declared or declare itself to be the winner. There's wisdom, then, in exercising all of our knowledge. Exercising all of our knowledge during the course of relationships to keep a situation from becoming a destructive conflict. Let me suggest some things that you might want to keep in mind that may help or may prevent destructive conflict from occurring. First, or number one, look before you leap. Listen. The largest single contributor to the reality of conflict in the church is the presence of people. Excuse me if this remark sounds too simple. Neither am I trying to be funny, but the fact is, conflict has its roots in human relationships. Without relationships, of course, there'd be no basis for interpersonal conflict. Of course, one of those institutions where people do exist is the church. The church is a natural place for conflict to occur because so much of what happens in the church is centered around working with people. So much is centered around people worshiping and struggling and learning, suffering, and growing together. Whereas some of these events are not especially encouraged outside the church, they are fostered within the church, struggling, learning, worshiping, suffering, growing together. As pastors move from church to church, they should spend more time learning about the church before they accept a call to serve it. They should spend more time learning about the church. And the church should thoroughly investigate a minister before extending a call. Now, I realize that in some denominations, neither pastor nor congregation can do this to the extent that they might like to do it. The assignment is made. The job must be done. However, an investigation should be made in any way that it can be made when possible. A very important and primary question that should be considered by pastor and people is in regard to their lifestyle. What does each observe about the other's values? What does each observe about the other's traditions and customs and beliefs? Can a city boy serve a country church, or can the situation be reversed? Can each be happy with the other? What attitudes prevail about where the pastor should live? What kind of car he should drive? How much money he should make? What kind of clothes he and his wife and even his children should wear? Makes no difference? Don't kid yourself. These matters are regularly discussed by church members and pastors, and they can serve as points from which conflict will arise. What is the church's attitude toward church growth and new members? Has the church experienced much growth during the past 5 years? Does information about the church and its location suggest the possibility of growth for at least the next 10 years? If not, then what is the church's vision for the next 10 years? What does it care about doing? So many times I've heard pastors and ministers and other staff members come and say, "My vision, my dream, my desire is not the same as theirs. We just can't seem to get it together. Things are not working as we'd like them to work." Financial and numerical growth are major concerns of most pastors and congregations. Before pastor and people come together, each should have a good understanding about what each expects in terms of growth. Is there a staff? How are they relating at this particular point in time? Do they plan to stay? Does one of them serve as a pastor without actually having the title? You know what I mean? How long have they been there? Is there a problem with a high turnover rate of staff? What are their feelings about the congregation? What about their feelings about lay leadership? What does the staff feel about What's its attitude toward growth? That is, its own attitude. What does the staff want to do in terms of church growth? What potential does the staff itself have for growth? How did the staff treat the former pastor? Let's go on. There are other questions that you really should consider before you make a move. Does the church have a constitution and bylaws, a set of bylaws? If so, can you live with them as they currently exist? If not, what will happen if you try to change the constitution? What will happen if you try to amend the bylaws? If a set of bylaws does not exist, what will happen if you try to lead the congregation in establishing them? Many churches have seen serious days of conflict due to the issue of constitution and bylaws. You should be very careful as you consider any type of action on this matter. As these documents are written, they come to express the traditions, the convictions, and the beliefs of a body of believers, and all these topics are controversial in nature. Further, churches consider these documents to be similar in status to the Bible. That is, questioning an established constitution and set of bylaws is like questioning the Bible. Who are the leaders in the church? How long have they been leaders in the congregation? Is the leadership of the church evenly distributed among the various families that comprise the church? Have people recently left this church? If so, why? And what did they feel was wrong? Or what did they feel was being done, or even not being done? How does the church feel about money? Is it to be saved or spent? If it is to be saved, how much does the church want to save, and how long do they feel like they need to save this money? Look at the buildings and the grounds. Are they in need of repair? Are they kept in a neat and orderly fashion? Do new buildings need to be constructed? Not only does the pastor need to look at the church, but the church needs to get to know about the pastor, his dreams, his attitude, and his lifestyle. Why is he available at this time? That's a good question. Why is a particular pastor, a particular minister available at this particular point in history, in this time period in his career? And another good question to ask is, how long does he stay at a church before moving to the next one? How long does he stay before moving to the next congregation? What is his philosophy of ministry? Are his preaching skills his main source of strength? How does he feel about visiting prospects? Does he visit prospects? Does he visit those who are in the hospital? Does he visit the bereaved? Is he a good administrator? Or how about this? What does his wife feel about his ministry? Does the pastor spend time with his wife and his children? Or what about his personal finances? Are they in order? Sadly, as it sounds, many pastors have a financial state of affairs that's greatly in a state of disorder. Does this man's theology fit well with that of the congregation? As you hear these questions, you're thinking that neither any pastor nor any church can give a positive response to all of them. Of course not. But if too many of these questions receive negative responses, then the parties involved need to be very cautious about advocating a union between themselves. A bad marriage is sure to result in eventual conflict and the possibility of a divorce. Look before you leap. Both pastor and congregation should give great thought to the relationship that's about to be established. Secondly, communicate. Communicate. A major function of the church is the assembling of the body for purposes of worship, planning, and fellowship. When two or more people come together, the challenge to communicate in a productive manner begins. Churches are often made up of people who are not reluctant to openly and assertively express themselves. The social nature of the church provides numerous opportunities for them to say what they want to say in reference to the current issue. Sometimes, freedom to speak in the church can be a source of conflict. Simply, there are two parts to the communication process: the sending of messages, the receiving of messages. Unfortunately, it seems that most of the effort in communicating is spent on sending messages. We like to tell the story. We like for other people to hear. We like for other people to hear our ideas and what we have to say. In the case of the church, the preacher preaches, directors direct, teachers teach. And of course, all of these events are legitimate and should be done. One way to keep conflict from getting a foothold is to be sure that you pass complete and accurate information at all times, especially during times of controversy. I'll say it again. One way to keep conflict from getting a foothold, to keep conflict from becoming destructive in nature, is to be sure that you pass complete and accurate information along at all times, especially during times of controversy. Lack of information is a cause of conflict and a serious cause of complications when conflict is in progress. Be sure that the information being sent is factually correct, timely, in good taste, and is of value to the one or the ones receiving the message. This is especially true if the messages are controversial in nature. Say specifically what you intend to say. Do not assume that you're being understood. Make sure you're being understood. Let sincerity be expressed as you say what you say, or say what you want to say. Repeat your message. Announce your message. Broadcast your message. Receiving messages is the second part of the communication process. Be careful here. Just because you have ears does not mean that you are hearing the message that is being sent. Just because you have a couple of ears hanging on the side of your head doesn't mean that you're really hearing the message or the messages that are being sent. Listen. Be particularly receptive and alert if you sense the beginning of a conflict. Listen with your ears. Listen with your mind. Listen with your eyes and listen with your heart. Listen for what is not being said. It could be that you are the only one receiving a message that will lead to destructive conflict. And unless something is done by you as you receive this message, at this point in time, it may be that the conflict may not be stifled, but it may develop into a very destructive conflict. When conflict occurs and someone begins to give reasons for being for or against something, the first information that is given is usually not the real reason for the disagreement. I'm sorry, but again, I must repeat this. When conflict occurs, someone begins to give reasons for being for something, for being against something, the first information that is given, the first reason, the first response that is given is usually not the real reason for the disagreement, or being for, or being against something. They are truly not saying what is the real issue. We have learned to fabricate reasons or excuses for so much of what we do and say, while it takes a keen insight to pull the real issue out of an explanation. Keep asking the question, what is the real issue? You can only do this as you learn and practice good listening skills. If all efforts to keep a destructive conflict from beginning have failed, do not give up. Continue to communicate. Maybe dialogue and the exchange of information can result in a solution. Patience. Patience. Patience is required here. But you want to be sure that you have exhausted every possibility of resolving the conflict with words rather than destructive actions or violence. Thirdly, And I'm talking now about preventive maintenance skills to keep destructive conflict from occurring. Thirdly, be sensitive. Be sensitive to the ideas. Be sensitive to the thoughts and feelings and burdens of others. People in most Christian denominations generally expect a more considerate behavior on the part of church members. For a pastor, staff member, lay leader, or general church member to be abrupt and insensitive can lay the groundwork for immediate or future conflict. Pastors can be fired because they moved a potted plant in the sanctuary that was placed there years ago by a beloved person who is now deceased. Be sensitive. Remember that church members can become embroiled in conflict because of something that was done to a friend or a family member rather than himself. He can get upset more about what something's done to somebody else than himself. And he'll fight for that particular reason. You should also remember your friends. There are those occasions in ministry when someone can be very helpful to you in different ways for different reasons. It may have been a word of wisdom, professional advice, the influence of power, or even financial assistance. Whatever the reason they have helped you, remember it. Especially remember what they have done when you have a chance to reciprocate. Just be wise in your relationships with other people. Be wise. Do not unnecessarily stir up trouble. What may seem insignificant to you may be very important to one of your church members. A fourth suggestion, and I found that this is hard to do among many pastors and staff members, and that is to admit an error, admit a mistake when you've made one. Everybody makes mistakes. How foolish it is to make a mistake, to know that you've made a mistake, and yet refuse that you've made an error, a mistake, simply because of personal pride, and how this seems to turn people against others who make mistakes and don't admit that they've made mistakes. The admission of an error early in the beginnings of conflict may keep it from degenerating into a destructive conflict. People are more prone also to forgive honest errors than they are to tolerate pompous pride. They'll forgive an honest error, but they don't like pompous pride. Furthermore, learn from your mistakes or be condemned to repeat them. One of the major sources of conflict in the church today is found within the hiring and the firing of the church staff. Some pastors cannot seem to ever find the right person to fill a staff vacancy. There are situations where pastors repeatedly select staff members who soon are the cause of some controversy in the church or among staff that's already there. And once that staff member has left, the pastor himself, without counsel, hires another staff member to fill his place, and that one also leaves within a short period of time. Learn from your mistakes. When you make them, admit to them, and then when you make them, learn from them. Simply, the pastor had not learned that he did not have the skill to interview and hire staff. And yet, because of his concept of the office of pastor, he insists on personally selecting staff members. Why not let the personnel committee at least investigate potential staff member or potential staff members and share their insights with the pastor before he selects someone? Admit error and learn from your mistakes. Fifth suggestion in this matter of preventive maintenance is to learn and understand the dynamics of anger. Anger surely is a God-given emotion. There are proper times to express anger. In fact, it can be immoral not to express anger on those occasions when a word of restraint or advocacy should be stated. You should direct anger at such things as corruption in government, substance abuse, environmental atrocities, unfair practices in business and labor. Let righteous anger be the impetus that energizes the correction effort. Unfortunately, the Christian faith has not done a good job of teaching its members about anger and how to properly express it. Too often, the only thing we say about anger is that we should not lose control of our tempers. Although everyone feels anger, not everyone has a healthy concept on how to express anger. While some people bury it within Others blatantly express it without thought to the consequences of such an expression. Learn to understand the dynamics of anger. Although everyone feels anger, not everyone has a healthy concept of how to express it. Uncontrolled anger can cause verbal conflicts to become physical conflicts. Uncontrolled anger can cause physical violence that may end in tragedy. Control your anger. Do not let your anger control you. A sixth suggestion. Get a handle on minor issues before they become major issues. Get a grasp on minor issues before they become major issues in the church. If not dealt with in an appropriate time frame, minor issues can become major sources of conflict. Minor issues can become major issues when confusion, anger, indifference, and self-interests take control. Some issues can and should be avoided, but legitimate issues deserve quick and direct responses. Allow children to misbehave in a worship service, ignore their chatter, their movements in and out of the sanctuary, their giggling, their laughing at inappropriate moments, and watch your worship service degenerate into a meaningless gathering of people. Or deal with the problem by asking for parental supervision or assistance by volunteers and therefore maintain a meaningful worship service. Church members are generally more tolerant than people outside the faith because of the nature and teachings of Christian doctrine, but they do have peripheral vision in a figurative sense as well as the literal sense. That is, they see things they do not like, but their value system and their patience lead them to let issues work themselves out. But after a while, even little old ladies who have been patient and tolerant for long periods of time will join the ranks of the dissatisfied and add strength to the cause. Do you hear what I'm saying? Deal with minor issues in most cases before they become major issues. There are some times when it's better to avoid that particular issue and it will go away. But on the other hand, be sure that when there is a minor issue that needs attention, it gets attention. Seventhly, the issue of leadership is very important when it comes to preventing conflict from becoming destructive conflict. Many church conflicts can be avoided if the persons with leadership responsibility exercise good leadership skills. Even in churches, individuals and groups tend to manipulate other individuals and groups in order to achieve a certain goal. Pastors, staff, and lay leaders with good leadership skills can maintain the peace by exercising proper control, but allowing legitimate freedom of expression when conflict is imminent. Good leadership skills include exercising fairness, making decisions, having a plan, providing an example, acting rather than reacting. Someone once said that people dislike dictatorial leaders. They dislike dictatorial leaders, but they hate weak leaders. This is true because the weak leader contributes more to the problem than he does to the solution. Maybe the weak leader leaves people confused and lacking a sense of direction while not giving them much hope of accomplishing anything. Strong leadership calls for proaction rather than reaction.